Thank you. All lines are now bridged.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you again for taking the time to be with us today. I hope everyone is well and enjoying the start of their summer as much as you can. With that, I will call the meeting to order and get started with official roll call. Carolyn Peterson.
Good morning.
Robert Law.
Morning. Present.
Michael Adcock. Not yet. Okay. Christina Carballo.
Good morning.
Tina Esposito. Not yet. Okay. Cynthia Fisher.
Good morning.
Valerie Gray.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Anil Jain.
Good morning. Good
morning. Jim Gerges. Not yet. Jim, John Kinsey.
Good morning.
Ken Kawamoto.
Good morning.
Stephen Lane. Good morning.
Hello.
Les Leonard. Arian Malik.
Good morning.
Clem McDonald. Morning, Arian. Clem McDonald. Aaron Leary.
Good morning.
Brett Oliver.
Good morning.
Terry O'Malley.
Good morning.
Jim Pantella.
Good morning.
Raj Watwani.
Good morning.
Steve Reedy.
Good morning.
Abby Sears. Okay. Alexis Snyder.
Good morning.
Sasha Termott.
Good morning.
Andy Trescott. Cheryl Turney.
Good morning.
Denise Webb.
Good morning.
Michelle Schreiber.
Good morning.
James Elsie. Not yet. Ram Sriram.
Good morning.
Good morning. Adi Gundalapi is not able to be with us, but I do believe we have a representative from CDC on the line, Jonathan Nebaker or Elaine Holt.
Actually, Adi is also on the line. I'll join for a little bit. Sorry. Yeah, thank you.
Great. Good morning, Adi. And Jonathan or Elaine? And Amy Abernathy? Or Nina Hunter? Okay. All right, with that, also from ONC, we have our National Coordinator, Dr. Rucker, our Deputy National Coordinator, Steve Posnack, Director of Policy, Elise Sweeney-Anthony, Acting Director of Technology, Avinash Shambhag, Chief Clinical Officer, Andy Gettinger, and Seth Kaczynski, our Division Director of Strategic Planning and Coordination. And with that, I will turn it over to Dr. Rucker for opening remarks.
Okay. Thanks, Lon. Welcome, everybody. Thank you all for joining. Obviously, COVID-19 still is front and center in all of our activities. We are engaged in lots of ways with HHS and the various parts of HHS on how ONC can support their activities in fighting COVID, getting more data on any number of critical clinical questions there. You may have seen HHS posted some lab reporting requirements last week to get a richer set of data on race and ethnicity. We've been working with a number of the HAEs who are in a very good position and able to provide that and merge results from other data sources to provide some of these richer data sets, a number of activities going on there. We have a COVID webpage so you can check out if you have questions there. We're going to be talking today about the draft voluntary user criteria for the EHR reporting program, which, as you remember, was a requirement in the 21st Century Cures Act, though not fully funded. So we've been using some of our general money for that. And so more to follow there. We have our 2020 ONC, we're calling it Tech Forum, our interoperability forum, Registration for that is now live. So you can see that. I don't know if there are limits on virtual attendance. We've bumped up against physical attendance limits in the prior 3 years we've done that. It's always been a pretty exciting high-yield activity. So hopefully in the virtualized way, it will be that. We have some pretty interesting virtualization software that we're going to use for this. On the management front, I guess, I want to congratulate Stephen Lane and Jim Gerges for their reappointments to HITAC for another 3 years. Both have been very helpful. Stephen has done an amazing job with many things, and Jim certainly, we've had a number of thoughtful conversations with him as well. And we just want to thank everybody. We obviously are in a funny state where the things we do are, you know, more important than ever, because people realize that there are vast IT issues in figuring out the diagnostic work of COVID, right? I mean, we still ultimately don't really know how it's transmitted, what its latency is, what its disease patterns are on the one hand, and then obviously the entire telehealth virtualization on the other hand. So with that, let me turn it over to our chairs, Carolyn and Robert.
Thanks, Dr. Rucker. Good morning, everyone. It's great to see everyone back at the meeting again, and I appreciate everyone's flexibility in transitioning from the regular in-person meeting we typically have in June to this virtual format. We have today four presentations. We will start with a review of our 2020 work plan by Lauren Ritchie. Then Al Taylor and Brett Andreessen from ONC will give us some updates on the standards recommendations. Aaron Murray and I will report in on the work of the annual report work group. And then Seth Pazinski and Crystal Ramos will lead a discussion on the EHR reporting program draft user criteria. We'll have a public comment period and then wrap up just a little bit after that. So with that, I think we'll start by approving the minutes from the May 13 meeting. All those who favor approving those minutes, signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
And all those who oppose approving the minutes, please signify by saying nay. And are there any abstentions? All right, we have approved the minutes from the May 13 meeting. I'll pass the mic to Robert for his welcome.
Well, thank you, Carolyn. And let me just add my welcome to everyone else who's here. I did want to follow on to Don's comment about the HHS guidelines for lab reporting. Obviously, this is something that I thought was important for the committee to hear based on our conversations about where technology can help in the COVID-19 epidemic. I think we talked a lot about the value of lab information, but the need for richer metadata around the lab results, such as demographics about an individual. So I thought that was an important part to share. I'll also say that many of you have heard me talk about the Commons project that I work for on the board of. We also are very interested in finding ways to use lab data as it becomes more important for movement. I know there's been a lot of controversy about the value of individual lab results in terms of passporting or allowing people to move into countries or venues, but there is a need for better flow of lab information, particularly in this epidemic. And so we're working with people like Microsoft, Google, and others to figure out if there's a standardized FHIR endpoint protocol that can be used to distribute lab results so that everyone knows how to get those lab results easily into their systems. And so I think that's an important piece of work. We also launched the Common Health, the Apple Health equivalent in Android. And so now we're able to ingest lab results into both Apple Health and Common Health. and that'll lead to people being able to display their status based on their lab results. So I think these are activities that we had all talked about during our COVID discussions, and I hope to see more activity to add more fluidity with data as we need in this important fight against the COVID-19 epidemic. So with that, I'll turn it back over to Lauren to describe the HITECH 2020 work plan.
Great. Thanks, Robert. Can we go to the next slide? Great. So now that we are about halfway through the year, just want to take a little bit of time to talk about plans for the remainder of the calendar year. Next slide. So if you recall, back in January, we presented a work plan that really just only went through the kind of summer-fall timeframe. And so we just wanted to kind of pick up where we left off, so really kind of a continuation of what we presented back in January. And again, focusing our remaining plans and activities around our three priority target areas of interoperability, privacy and security, and patient access. Next slide. So this represents input we received from the prior year. We also presented this list back in January. This covers conversations that we've had either at the task force level or at the full committee level, or topics from the annual report or other ONC priorities. But essentially, many of these topics have been under consideration and help to feed into the plans for the balance of the calendar year. Next slide. So this is just a quick snapshot of kind of where we are to date and what's coming down the pike. So again, thanks to your recommendations, obviously we've completed and released the ONC Cures Final Act, review of the CMS interoperability and patient rule, and completed your feedback on the Federal Health IT Strategic Plan. Obviously, today we're going to have kind of our official committee level rollout of the fiscal year 20 HITECH end report and starting that conversation. Also today, obviously looking at draft criteria for the EHR reporting program. Last month, we heard from the ICAD task force, and we'll plan to hear from them again in the fall. And then, obviously, we're still exploring options for additional COVID-19 follow-up activity for the committee. Looking ahead, we identified integrating and using received data as a priority topic, which may or may not be kind of folded into the ISP activity, looking at the trust exchange framework and final common agreement, and then perhaps taking a more focused look and discussion around patient access. Next slide. So again, just a timeline view of some of the things I just mentioned. So those items in blue being confirmed for the end report, the HR reporting program today, and the ICAT task force. Just wanted to highlight two activities we're planning for the fall, and that is around the interoperability standards priorities. So if you recall from the Cures Act, it requires us to take a revisit or review the standard priorities that were identified from the baseline report set of recommendations that we received from the ISP task force last fall. And then also possibly looking at the ONC EHR contract guide that we are anticipating presenting to you for feedback in the October-November timeframe. And then just a note, in September, we will hold additional administrative meetings to talk through a number of items, but more importantly, looking ahead to 2021 and starting to get your input for plans for next calendar year. So next slide. Yep, okay, so that was it. So just wanted to give you a snapshot of what's to come. Obviously, as you have additional thoughts and conversations, feel free to send those my way. And then we will plan to have more dedicated time in the fall for additional planning activities. So with that, I'll pause to see if there are any questions on this so far. Quiet group this morning. Alrighty, so again, feel free to reach out at any time if you have any thoughts or questions. So with that, I will turn it back over to our co-chairs.
Thanks, Lauren.
Thanks, Lauren.
We will now have some updates from Al Taylor and Brett Andreessen with ONC. Go ahead, please.
Thank you very much. I'm Al Taylor from ONC Standard Division. I'm joined by my Myers parrot, Merlin. He'll be chiming in occasionally in the background. Sorry about that. Next slide, please. We all know that ONC published the US CDI version 1 in March of this year. Even before we published it, in fact, the second half of last year, we've been working on the next version of USCDI by developing the criteria for evaluation of new data elements that are proposed for addition to the USCDI in future versions. Next slide, please. The HITECH, especially the USCDI task force, developed these criteria to determine what are the minimum sort of entry requirements for the different levels of data elements and the levels of maturity and levels of development and use and interoperability that are designated as either comment level 1 or level 2. And the items that have been, or the data elements rather, that have been entered as level 2 will be considered going forward for future versions of USCDI. Next slide, please. So one of the tools that we have developed is called ONC On Deck, for the new data element and class submission system. And we expect to release that or open it up to the public on or about the 1st of July of this year. So we're just waiting on PRA clearance and final design, and we'll have that up and running very shortly to be able to accept new data elements for consideration. Next slide, please. This is a summary of the previous table showing the criteria, but we will be accepting information for each of the new data elements, specifically around the use case, including the benefit or value to stakeholders. We are going to be evaluating maturity on three different levels. One is the representation of standards or implementation guides, the extent of current use in systems, whether it's being exchanged or not, and then the extent of exchange. And the methods and mechanisms of exchange that are already in place, which point to the feasibility of adoption of future adoption into USCDI. We also are interested, of course, in the challenges and burdens and barriers to implementation, these including the IP, intellectual property licensing, and dollar cost of development and implementation, as well as any privacy security concerns, which already pertain to some of the different data elements within USCDI, but could very easily apply to the privacy and security. I'm sorry, could apply to new data elements. Next slide, please. This is a high-level timeline. We've all seen this before, showing the different parts of the development of USCDI. Although we would have liked to start submissions for accepting proposed new data elements for version 2. That has not begun yet, but we will begin shortly. Once the submission system actually will be open, up and running continuously, but we'll have a cutoff of approximately the third quarter of each calendar year, and at which point we'll complete all of the evaluation of the data elements that have been submitted to date. We'll prepare a draft version 2 based on those recommendations. And that draft will be presented to the HITECH and to the public for comment on or about the 1st of January will probably be one of the things that we present at the first meeting of 2021. After a period of comment and evaluation and recommendations by the HITAC and the public, we'll sort of turn internally again and develop our version 2, which will be, once finalized, will be not only available, will be available for obviously public consumption, and it may well be a new standard that is being considered, would be considered for inclusion in the standards version advancement process. And it's and we had previously had more details on the SVAP, and we're separating this out because the USCDI as a standard is one of many that will be considered for SVAP in the future. Next slide, please. Oh, that's it. I'm going to turn it over to Brett Andreessen, who's going to talk more about the standards version advancement process.
Thanks, Al. This is Brett, and I am not the parrot that Al was mentioning when he first started speaking. I'm the standards advisory lead in our Office of Technology, and if we can go to the next slide, I will just give some quick background on the SVAP. We finalized it as part of the final rule. It allows health IT developers to import newer version of standards or specifications adopted by the secretary into certified products following national coordinator approval, and it's part of the real-world testing conditions and maintenance of certification requirements. So all the eligible standards and specification for advancement under SVAP are currently listed at healthit.gov/SVAP, right there on the slide. And that list, you can see in the image to the right, the screenshot, the table, the left two columns around the standard name or the reg tech citation can be sorted to view that a little bit better. And it's integrated into the larger ISO platform like the USCDI is. The list doesn't include any minimum vocabulary standards or code sets, as those can already be certified or upgraded to newer versions per program terms unless that's explicitly prohibited. And as noted on the slide here, public comments will be solicited to help ONC make determinations as to industry readiness for advancement of specific standards or specifications. And we're looking at around the next month or so, likely timed pretty closely with the ISA comment period. Moving on to the next slide, we'll go through some of the operational details that we're working towards. So first and foremost, ONC will look at the standards landscape and may identify on the SVAP page standards that are under consideration already for SVAP. This wouldn't necessarily limit others from advancing, but just a way to signal things that we may have our eye on or want specific feedback on. And then we'll be establishing a regular recurring comment period, much like the ISA, and likely aligned with that comment period to solicit input from industry on anything that is on that eligible list of standards. And will certainly be communicated and announced widely through typical ONC channels. So be on the lookout in the next few weeks for more details and timeline on that. Following the comment period, ONC staff will review comments received and make recommendations to the national coordinator for which standards to consider for advancement. ONC will publish that list of the standards and versions specifically that have been approved under SVAP authority. And then finally, as needed and possible, the ONC certification program may provide updated test tools or other resources to assist with advancement. And then prior to rolling out those updated versions, the clients, developers will have to take a number of steps that I would encourage folks to take a look at the specific rule language to make sure that those updates can be rolled out to their clients. And I think that is all we have. I think we can take a few questions, both Al and I, on SVAP or USCDI from the committee members if they have them at the time.
Hey, hi, tech
member.
Please let us know.
Please let us know
by raising your hand in the Adobe function. And we'll go to callers who are just on the phone also. Hey, are there any HITAC members on the phone who have questions? Let's hear from Clem. Go ahead, please. You might be on mute, Clem. any other questions from other high-tech members?
So it looks like we don't have Clem on the phone. We can try to get him dialed in and circle back, if that's okay, Carolyn?
Sure, yeah. I was looking to see. I don't see any hands raised from other high-tech members. High-tech folks, if you have a question, would you please speak up so we know you're on the line and have a question? Okay. Are you having any success getting Clem back on the line? It looks like in the public comment chat, he says he would like to talk, but we're not hearing him.
Yeah, I think he's on Adobe, but he's not dialed into the voice part.
Yeah, Clem, if you can hear us, you just have to call the phone number in your meeting invite, and you'll be connected through. So, Carolyn, I'll give you a heads up once I confirm that Clem is on the line.
Okay. Yeah, I don't see any other hands, or I'm hearing from other high-tech members with questions. You want to give it another minute? Or what's your preference?
All right, is that for me, Carolyn?
Yeah, I don't see. Jonathan Nebaker has a question. Go ahead, Jonathan.
Hey, I have a question that may betray my ignorance more than anything else, but on the maturity on slide 5, it seemed to be the main criteria for adoption to the US CDI. At face value, they seem to make a lot of sense. But I just have a concern that there seems to be a bit of a catch-22. In that use, the main requirement for adoption is use, and it seems like this creates a huge dependency on vendors implementing the use. And is this a concerning dependency? Do you have mitigation strategies? Is this not an issue? How should I think about this potential? What looks like an ability for vendors to block data elements for going to US CDI.
Well, this is Al. I'm not sure that I can comment on the latter part of your question about developers preventing use. I can't really speak to that. We are looking to adopt, implement data elements that have at least demonstrated the potential for implementation, use, and exchange. And whether that's in a small system, a limited number of systems, limited number of exchange settings, it would be at least the potential. In some cases, I think that the ability to exchange widespread is an indication of its value to overall national interoperability. And so we would be looking at least for that potential for capture and exchange, but it doesn't have to be by a system of a certain size. Just to show the potential. And then the value of the use case is also an important criteria, although obviously it seems more subjective. We want to be able to demonstrate the overall value to a large group of users.
So this is Clem. I think I'm live now.
Go ahead, Clem.
So my question or issue was the detail or the specifics of what people were asking. So, for example, one could say we should report depression scores, but then which one? I mean, so there's some tricky stuff in the hierarchy of what exactly one wanted. And we sort of face it now with some of the emergency room data or the admission data or vital signs data. You know, it says do this. But what about the other variations and the theme of that? You know, there's often, so I almost think we should be talking about classes of terms within some code system if we're going to, you know, define it well or something like that. I mean, just saying we want to give an area doesn't mean you'll get anything that's computable.
In some cases, Clem, there'll be a almost universally accepted standard for collection, use, and exchange of the data. Mm-hmm. I think that something like the PHQ 2 and 9 are good examples of that. I don't know of anybody who's advocating for something a little bit more offbeat or more niche as far as applicability.
That's a good point. So I mean, it doesn't come across in the specifications that you've got to be specific at a level that you can therefore compute it. It's invisible, I think, and some people don't get it that would be important.
Yeah, that's a fair point. We do have, you know, I just point out to that, and I think everybody knows this, that in the USCDI version 1, we have some data elements that have specific standards, and sometimes those specific standards are simply captured within LOINC or captured within SNOMED, as opposed to captured with a particular code in SNOMED or LOINC. Depending on the particular application, there may or may not be a very specific standard or code to use.
Well, I think that's a good point. I would like to see it elevate a little bit more so that people who are naive about how you do this, what are their choices to specify something?
Yeah, and there are going to be submissions for recommendations for addition that are going to require a further conversation, and and the people that submit are going to probably have a variety of levels of experience in, you know, either data element or standards work, and so we will provide some assistance and further communication about what else is needed. And this is, if something is determined to be of a lower level, which means not as much maturity, it may just require more information
to complete the
application.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Sure, thanks.
And let's go to Terry O'Malley now.
Yeah, hi. And my question is just, is there an explicit rollout plan for getting the word out for OnDeck, which, by the way, is a great name. So congratulations.
Congratulations on the name. Thank you very much. We are going to communicate it. I don't know exactly the mechanisms, but, you know, through our regular communication system, we have a blog. I mean, we have a listserv, which we can publicize. I would imagine the trade press might be interested in the availability of the system. We do blog about different topics that we put out as well. So it'll be in one or all of those systems.
Great, thanks.
And let's go to Ken Kawamoto, please.
Thanks. Just a comment and follow up on what Jonathan was questioning. Isn't it a catch-22 to say widespread adoption is required, basically to certify that it should be widespread adoption? This is something that we discussed quite at length in the USCDI task force, and I think it is a key point, right? So I think the potential roles here are for the ONC to facilitate some of that piloting, kind of like earlier SNI framework works, or certain groups to get together and try to convince their vendors to show that this is doable. But I think it is quite a valid point. I'm not sure to what extent the US CDI is actually helpful if it simply acknowledges the status quo as everyone's implementing it, so now it's part of the US CDI.
Thanks, Ken.
And let's go to Arian Malik.
Good morning. So this topic is something that has been something we've studied extensively in past FACAs, and you know, I'd like to point people to the standards maturity model that the somewhat strangely named NHIN Power Team created as a set of recommendations to the national coordinator a while back, as well as some work that we did on the SNI, what was an SNI framework replacement process that I think has morphed into the SFAP. These concerns of how do we establish a floor while preserving flexibility for developers to work on a ceiling is a real and valid set of issues that policymakers need to address. So I think it would be worthwhile looking at the SFAP and ensuring that it does meet the needs for establishing flexibility and testing and using newer versions of standards or standards that address additional requirements. So as an example, right now we have FHIR R4, and R5 that's being worked on right now. R4 is the established version, and yet most EHRs are on R2. This is actually a pre-SFAP issue. In this case, the R2 users are there because all of the consumers are R2, and it's really hard to break that dependency. So the situation becomes worse when we need to maintain certification on a consistent version, and also need to contemplate upgrades. And I think we just need to look at the experience of ICD-10 and the upgrade there, the experience of rolling out new versions of administrative standards, and how long it takes us to get to the latest versions of standards to see the issues involved in this process. It's a tough set of issues, but I would encourage ONC to think heavily about how to use the SFAP to provide additional, I know the intent is to provide additional flexibility, how that works in practice, what the incentives are, and how to make sure that HIT developers get the opportunity and the potentially grants or other kinds of pilot testing in order to develop new versions of the standards while the floor versions are out there. Thank you.
Are there any other questions from HITECH members, either on the Adobe or on the phone? Okay, hearing none, I will say thank you to Al and Brett for presenting to us today. We appreciate the opportunity to hear what's going on. And I will now transition to the annual report work group update that's coming to you from myself and Aaron Meary. We have the next slide, please. So today we're going to talk just briefly to let you know what the work group has been up to since you last heard from us in February. At that time, we were able to approve the annual report for fiscal year 2019, and we took a hiatus from the HITECH meetings, but began working behind the scenes on the 2020 version. So today, we'll look at our membership, our meeting schedules, and our next steps, and then give you a brief presentation on the potential topic list for this year's report. Next slide, please. So here's our rosters. Returning to the work group are myself, Aaron Meary, Christina Carballo, and Brett Oliver. And then working with us from ONC are Dr. Rucker, Elise Anthony, Seth Pazinski, Lauren Ritchie, and Michelle Murray. The next slide, please. Go ahead. So the work group has had two meetings to date where we are discussing the various topics that came from comments from things we held over from last year's work. And as things evolve, just seeing what we're doing with the COVID work in this committee. We met in May and June, and we will meet again in July and August, and then present to you in September. Next slide, please. Today, we're just kind of giving you a sense of the topic list, and then in September, we will be able to do more full discussion, looking again to getting through a review draft in January and getting that approved in February of 2021. The next slide, please. What we're going to do today is present a draft list of potential topics at this meeting. We are going to develop our draft crosswalk of topics with gaps, opportunities, and recommended activities across our target areas at our work group meetings in July and August. And then in September, we are going to present the draft crosswalk for discussion at the full HITAC meeting. Next slide, please. And with that, I'll hand the mic over to Aaron to go through the list of potential topics.
Yes, good morning. Thank you, everybody. First of all, I just want to wish health and happiness to everybody on the call. I know that here in Austin, we are dealing with a surge. I'm certain you guys are seeing your also effects of what's going on across the country, and I hope all of you are being cautious and your families are safe and sound. To that end, we did want to pick up some of the items from the annual report last year that did carry over. And you'll see a lot of applicability of these topics as we saw it all play out during the COVID situation a few months ago. So anyways, from a topical perspective that are going to carry over from the annual report for FY19, the O&C Cures Act, the final rule, TEFCA program updates, CMS interoperability and patient access final rule, SDOH, social determinants of health data, how to exchange those, use and sharing of PGHD, patient-generated health data, and of course, Internet of Things. Next slide. So from some of the comments of this committee for last year's annual report, we really take a lot of time and a lot of credit to the ONC staff for making sure that all of these are captured. But these are some of your explicit comments that you wanted us to talk about in this upcoming report. Around interoperability, EHR certification criteria to support patient safety, establishment of common metadata, nomenclature and use, increasing interoperability across the care continuum, being to long-term post-acute care, behavioral health, home and community-based services, and then correction of incorrect data and ramifications of exchange of incorrect data. It's amazing, again, all these topics, how we saw them and how we're seeing them play out during COVID-19. Around privacy and security, improving patient and receiver consent process for research and data sharing. And then privacy and security concerns about the use of synthetic data. And then patient access to information, increased price transparency for patients. Again, all these are very relevant and are very much playing out in front of us. Next slide. All right, so some other potential areas here that for the next year's report, public health. You know, within the 21st Century Cures Act, in addition to the three priority target areas, the HITAC can make recommendations about the use of technology to support public health and data for use and quality in public reporting programs. So some of the comments for this year around public health specifically, support for standardized codes, data, and terminology, document COVID-19, patient diagnoses, treatment, and case reporting in clinical care. You know, I know a number of HITAC members have been very involved with the CDC and others in helping to try to overcome some of these barriers. You know, big hats off to Dr. Stephen Lane and others for the great partnership in trying to help public health and deal with COVID-19. But this is definitely one of those areas that all of us can think about and really add to and see how we can help solve this problem. Next slide. Some other comments also around interoperability, improving information exchange for research. Information blocking, specifically around the analysis of changing business practices and barriers to competition over time, and then the impact of the proposed EHR exception and safe harbor provisions and the definition of inducement. Privacy and security, specifically around the safety and effectiveness of mobile health applications. I saw this play out here in Austin as we rolled out contact tracing and home monitoring. Number two, organ transplant use cases for health IT around the for data exchange and outcome measures, and then implications of large and private sector partnerships or third-party access to health data. Again, we saw this and major play out in the news as it is right now with contact tracing. and patient access to information, ensuring patient access and engagement and data exchange, perhaps using the TAFCA. Next slide. So some general questions, and again, I want to go back to something Carolyn said. You know, we're not looking for debate here. I really, the whole point of this discussion was to get our mind wrapped around topics that were on annual report from last year and things we're thinking about for this year. In the September committee, we do want to have a robust debate. So I would ask each of you to, you know, if you have thoughts, marinate on it, send it in. Let us know what you're thinking. We definitely want to have that robust discussion in September. But to the degree of it, you know, look at those topics that we sent out, add to them, really think through, you know, each of your locales, what have you experienced, what have your clinicians experienced and whatnot, and how can we bring that to the committee as robust stories to go overcome. And so some specific topics here for discussion by HITECH members that we really, really should think through. Again, that improving information exchange for research, specifically consent process for patients for received data. Think about organ transplant and use cases there, and then ensuring patient access and engagement in data exchange, again, using the TEFCA. Those specific things, think through them. There's a lot of dimensions in all of these, and even as a committee, as an annual report work group committee, as we were talking through this, we had, you know, hours of discussion around each of these topics. We didn't begin to scratch the surface. So with that, next slide. I think that's it. All right. So, Carolyn, I want to turn it back over to you. But really, again, for the whole committee, I would ask you, please think about, email us, let us know your thoughts and your opinions, and we absolutely will capture those. Appreciate your time today, and please be safe.
Yes, and let me add my admonitions also that we are all safe and my best wishes for good health. What we had brought forward from the last year's work was a 9-page Word document with comments, some general topic areas. It's been expanded to 10 pages in light of some of the work that's going on around COVID and what we now see are as public health related topics. We didn't want to bring that and present all of that to the HITECH again because much of that feedback has come from you and we feel there's really a role for us in organizing that before we start asking for specific comments. But we really do encourage you to email us any thoughts you have. We can take that into account at this point and see how that fits into the overall plan and the overall report. With that, I will hand the mic back to Robert to introduce
you. Thanks, Carolyn, and thanks to you, Aaron, for your work on this important committee. To the HITECH, if there are questions or comments about the annual report, please raise your hand in the Adobe application, and we'll get you recognized. Also want to make sure that we hear from folks who are not logged into the Adobe app. If your HITECH member is on the phone only, please just announce yourself, and we'll get you on the list to speak. So anyone that has any questions or comments about the annual report, this is a time for us to hear from you. All right. I don't see any additional hands. Why don't we move on to the EHR reporting program and the draft user criteria? And with that, I'll introduce Seth and Krista Ramos for them.
All right. Thank you, Robert. Hi, this is Seth Kaczynski with Office of National Coordinator for Health IT. Hello, everyone, and thanks for the opportunity to present. And I'm looking forward to hearing your feedback on the voluntary draft user criteria under the EHR reporting program. So myself and the Urban Institute team will provide an overview and get into some of the draft criteria, and then we should have an hour or a little more than an hour for your feedback and discussion. So hopefully plenty of time for folks to share any thoughts or ask questions. Just a little bit of an overview before I turn it over to Crystal. The EHR reporting program was created under the 21st Century Cures Act, and its purpose is to provide publicly available comparative information about certified health IT. And there's two components to it. There's mandatory developer reporting, And then voluntary user reporting. So today we're focused on the latter, the user reporting piece. And the categories across both those areas cover things like interoperability and usability and a few other required categories. So I'm just going to give a kind of a quick recap on progress to date in the HR reporting program implementation, highlight where we are now in that process, and then touch on some next steps as well. So first, just on the recap of progress, our initial discussion with the HITAC came just before the Urban Institute began their work under a contract with ONC, and ONC received feedback on a request for information and discussed and obtained HITAC feedback also at that time on that request for information. And those insights and the public feedback from the request for information really was the foundation for the Urban Institute and starting their work. Following that, the Urban conducted some additional background research and conducted an extensive stakeholder engagement process through various methods, which you'll hear a little bit more detail on. And the results of that work was published in a stakeholder input summary report. And then the first result of the work of all that stakeholder engagement is these draft voluntary user reported criteria that are available currently for a public comment. So where we're at today is the draft voluntary user reported criteria were published earlier this month for a 60-day public feedback period, which ends on August 10th. And so in addition to any feedback received directly through Urban, the discussion today and resulting transcript from this meeting will serve as public feedback that Urban will consider as it works on to revise a set of voluntary user reported criteria and submit that to ONC. So one thing I just want to highlight here is kind of unlike the federal rulemaking process, we don't have to separately submit the comments that we hear or discuss today to Urban. You can consider any feedback you provide on this call will be considered for purposes of revising the draft criteria. And then as far as next steps and what to expect next, the Urban Institute, again, who's ONC's contractor to implement the HR reporting program, will review the feedback received and provide a revised set of voluntary user reported criteria to ONC. And then following this step, the Urban Institute will then finalize a draft of developer reported criteria. So again, the other kind of half of the EHR reporting program, and that draft developer reported criteria will similarly be made available for public feedback, and we'll re-engage the HITAC to get your feedback on the developer reported criteria as well. So just that a little bit of context to get us started, I'll transition it now over to Crystal Ramos and the Urban Institute team to provide some additional background and take us through the draft voluntary user reported criteria. Crystal.
All right, great. Thank you so much, Seth. I would go to the next slide. Hi, I'm Crystal, and as Seth mentioned, I'll be sharing with you today about our progress to date developing the EHR reporting program, and then we'll walk through the draft reporting criteria for the program to be voluntarily reported by end users of certified health IT products. And as these draft criteria were recently posted, we really are interested today in hearing your feedback, so I hope the bulk of the time will be discussion. I just wanted to point out, my colleague Kathy has posted the link to the website where draft user criteria are posted, and they're also available in the downloads on the side I see if you would like to access those and reference them as I go through today. You can go to the next slide, or the next one, to show you the project team. As I've mentioned, Urban has been contracted by ONC to help develop this program, and we have subcontracted with Health Tech Solutions. So a number of our team members are on the call today and will be helping answer questions and discussing with us today. The next slide, as an overview, as was mentioned, the EHR reporting program was mandated by the 21st Century Cures Act to provide publicly available comparative information about certified health IT through mandatory developer reporting, voluntary user reporting, and today we are focusing on the second one, the user reporting. The Cures Act included five domains that these criteria should cover, and that includes interoperability, usability and user-centered design, security, conformance to certification testing, and other categories as appropriate. next slide, why is this program needed? As some of the initial background work that has been built upon by this project, in 2015, ONC did a review as part of a report for Congress and identified there were 18 existing health IT comparison tools, but these tools had some major limitations, including high user fees to access information, some methodological issues, and lack of some of the specific information that would be useful as people are making decisions about purchasing or upgrading their certified health IT products. As part of our project, we conducted additional review of these tools in 2018 and found some additional limitations. Some were no longer available, some catered to a more narrow, specialized audience, so just limits in the types of information that were available as well. In addition, during the stakeholder process, which we will talk about more shortly, stakeholders did raise concerns with existing tools that point to the need for a program such as been mandated by the Cures Act to provide publicly available comparative information. We also did hear from stakeholders throughout the process a need for this information to inform their decision-making to purchase IT products, especially for smaller or more rural practices that may not have the resources or an IT department to help them make this purchase, or may not be able to afford one of the more common products. For example, we heard from a nurse practitioner who runs her own practice who told us she got the information on which system to buy from Facebook. So the example is stuck in my mind as a reason why this is needed. Next slide. Just walking through our timeline briefly to develop this program. As was mentioned in the beginning, we began with a review of the RFI comments that were submitted and also reviewed existing literature and comparison tools of literature on the ways that performance, EHR performance and health IT have been measured, how they're currently being measured in other data sources and tools. And then from February to October in 2019, we collected stakeholder input. In November and December 2019, we developed the draft criteria. And then the beginning of 2020, we went through a process of testing and revising the criteria. And then we just recently posted them online for public comment, the user criteria. Next slide. Here's the next one. So going through the stakeholder input in a little more detail, I just wanted to show you the different ways that we collected input. There were 77 comments that we analyzed from a variety of stakeholders from the RFI. We also had public forums and office hours in 7 states. We went to 4 professional association conferences and were in the exhibit hall and had specific meetings with users and heard feedback there. We had some topical virtual group discussions focused on the different domains like interoperability, security, and then there were some groups that were more defined by the type of people that joined, like a trading partners or ambulatory providers, and a rural group as well. We had one-on-one discussions with experts on safety, on measurement, different topics like that. We also had market research calls with existing EHR compare tools, and then a dedicated email inbox for public feedback. This next slide shows the framework summarizing what we heard from stakeholders as their priorities throughout the engagement process. We'll go into more detail, but just wanted to start by summarizing at a high level some of the priorities we heard, which are in the box on the left. So overall, we heard from stakeholders they did see value in this program in providing comparative information to help differentiate between products, but even more than just a shopping tool to compare products, they wanted to see the program be something that really promotes transparency and accountability and safety and drive market improvements. They also wanted to make sure it filled information gaps and minimized the burden to users and to those reporting information as well, and that what we collect ultimately can be updated frequently so that it'll actually be useful. So you can see the columns in this framework are the domains from the Cures Act, and the blue arrows running across are the types of information that they were interested in across domains. So these included information on the functionality of certified health IT products, what capabilities does the product have, on the performance, how does the product perform in the real world, and then on cost and developer practices, to how is the pricing structured and the contracts and user support, how is that, is it available, is it an additional fee? And there's a link to a report summarizing our stakeholder feedback that we heard on the webpage where the draft criteria has been posted for public feedback. Next slide. So based on the stakeholder priorities, we began to drive criteria, and we envision the criteria coming from 3 different sources, from existing data sources. This would be things like chapel, perhaps information that's being collected through other attestation processes or administrative information. Chapel was largely a source we focused on, but chapel includes mostly binary measures on functionality. So for information on performance, but we need to collect probably more directly from developers and users. So the other two pieces are criteria that would be collected directly from EHR developers, and this would be mandatory, and the criteria to be voluntarily collected from certified health IT users. So that's why it's been posted in the format of a questionnaire that would be asked to them. And next in the process, we revised the measures based on feedback that we got from subject matter experts. We then did cognitive and feasibility testing with a small group of developers and users to see if the questions we had come up with made sense, if they were measuring what we were aiming to, if people could answer those questions. We revised the draft criteria based on the testing, and then, as you mentioned, they were posted on June 9th online. And the draft criteria for the developers are continuing to be developed, and they will be posted at a later date. Next slide. And just some findings from the development process we want to summarize for you. Not all the stakeholder priorities were feasible to capture through the draft criteria. There were some priorities that were too burdensome to collect, and probably mention some of those as we go through the individual domains more specifically. We also found that the best source for different types of stakeholder priorities vary. So it seems that in terms of collecting information for users, it made the most sense to focus on usability. But then from developers, it seemed to make more sense to focus on interoperability, privacy, and security. And then from other sources, it seemed it would be best to get information on conformance and certification. We also found that end users of certified health IT products varied. There's probably a range of people we need to talk to get the types of information that stakeholders prioritize, including clinicians, administrative staff, IT staff, and EHR specialists. And then finally, some of the findings suggested that it makes the most sense for clinicians to be able to report on their personal experience with the product, while the IT staff could report more in the aggregate for the experience of their practice. It's also to say, based on the findings, these are criteria we're about to go through. They cover only a small portion of the stakeholder priorities we heard, given many of the priorities were determined to be a better fit to collect from other sources. In addition, given the user reporting is voluntary, knowing end users have really limited time, we aim to keep the number of questions as few as we could. So before going into the draft user criteria, I just wanted to pause to see if anyone had a question or a comment about the development process or the framework. I know there have been some chats going on, so I haven't been following, but if there's anything that you need to address, I'll just pause and see. Okay, I think I will keep going.
We have a couple of hands up. I'm not sure it's specific to these points, but I'll ask Stephen Lane and Terrence first to see if they have questions about your specific question.
Okay. Yeah, this is Stephen Lane. I'll just offer a comment, which is a reminder to everyone that I was engaged as an advisor to this effort and had a chance to work closely with the teams from both Urban Institute and Health Tech as they went through this process. I just wanted to say that they did a really remarkable job reaching out across the spectrum of the user community, really making an effort to reach out to small practice providers, to those working in rural areas, to clinicians beyond physicians, looking at nurse practitioners, et cetera. So I think a lot of really thoughtful effort went into gaining input to this process. So I'm very excited to see sort of how they put it all together here in the end.
Thanks, Terry. Did you have another question?
Yeah, this is Terry O'Malley. This is an impressive piece of work. And my question is more about sort of usability across the spectrum, the exchange of information from hospitals, not only within their systems, but also with skilled nursing facilities, post-acute care in particular, where where the interoperability sort of falls off quickly as the high-tech funds disappeared. And just interested in your comments on how far out you're able to push your assessment beyond the ambulatory care settings and the hospitals themselves.
Great question. We grappled with this a lot, and I'll start and maybe others from my team will chime into, but we did really want to include long-term post-acute care, behavioral health, other providers that were perhaps left out of the meaningful use incentives. So we grappled with how to do that. Given that the requirement for this specific program focuses on certified health IT products, as we discussed it with stakeholders, we just, you know, realized there would not really be an incentive for people to contribute information on non-certified products, which a lot of those providers use. So we in our framework and how we thought about this, we then determined they would become more thought of as trading partners. So we thought if we could include criteria that could consider how well products trade with other systems, perhaps not, you know, within those that are certified, that might be how we could reach it, but it is limited. We did speak with, I know there is an EHR compare tool that is quite widely used for long-term care products. That definitely, it is a little bit of a limit to what we've done given the focus on certified products. I don't know if Gary or others want to chime in a little bit more.
Yeah, this is Gary Ozanich. We did solicit input from long-term post-acute care stakeholders, both in terms of organizations that represent those entities, but also specifically as we had our listening sessions across the country. In some regions, we specifically reached out through organizations that represent those entities and also the state government to make sure that they were invited to participate in the sessions, and in particular, in some regions, we had very good turnout with long-term post-acute care and behavioral health. So we did, I believe, listen very closely and engage with the providers and other stakeholders in that space. But as Crystal mentioned, the focus is on certified health IT. So to that extent, we took a trading partner approach and suggested evaluation on how well it supports exchange and other activities with those trading partners. Crystal?
Yep, I hope that answers the question.
Yes, that's one more comment, though. Since interoperability is really in the eyes of the really end user, it would be, I think, important to solicit feedback from, again, post-acute care, behavioral health, who are not traditionally engaged in the purchase and use of extensive HIT, to just to ask them whether or not they're getting what they need in a complete and in a timely fashion, and then they can use what they get. Because that's ultimately, I think, the measure of interoperability.
Mm-hmm. True, that's a good point. Yeah, we'll certainly continue to think about that some more. But you're right, in terms of the trading partners reporting on their experience working with people who have a specific product. All right, were there other hands or should I move on?
John Kansky, you had your hand up. Do you have another comment on a specific point?
No, I'll wait. Oh, sorry, I'll wait till the end. It's a general comment.
All right, great. Why don't you go ahead and proceed with our presentation then?
Okay, great. To the next slide. So I'm going to walk through the draft user criteria, going through each domain. And if you have the questionnaire handy, you could look at the specific questions for that section. I'm going to pause with each domain to see if you have any specific questions or comments in terms of what to prioritize to include from that domain, and maybe some if you have any specific feedback on the wording of the questions, we would welcome that as well. And then at the end, after walking through all the domains, I'll have some bigger picture questions to discuss in terms of what types of end users could best report this information, how we could target and motivate this group to voluntarily contribute information. So starting with interoperability, these are under question 5 in the draft user criteria questionnaire. It's a very multi-part question, you'll see. And it also includes an open-ended portion of the question, so users could comment more specifically on their experience if they'd like. But for the interoperability domain, the draft user criteria really focuses on the usability of various interoperability functions that emerged as priorities from the Stapler process. So there are other things we considered, like more reporting on, specific connections that could be made, or it made more, perhaps might seem objective, but determined through our process that it really makes the most sense for users to report on their experience and the ease of use. So you can see on the first column lists the priority topics, and then the user criteria shows a little bit more specifically. But these criteria, they focus on the ease of exchange with various entities such as HIEs and HIOs, the ease of connecting with the local PDMP, the ease of exchange with different types of clinicians, those who have a different product than their own, those outside the organization, those inside the organization, and also payers. And then ease of exchange with public health and clinical registries. And then the last two report kind of the ease of producing the reports, like quality measures and quality reporting requirements for specialty, and the ease of attestation to promoting interoperability or to NIPS. Given we heard a lot of these, they really reflect on kind of the pain points we heard from stakeholders throughout the process, things that they want more information on, but I think they also want a level of transparency and accountability in the field on these priorities. So if you want to look at the question under question 5, I know it might not be easy to on the spot think through, but if there's things you want to share specifically about the wording or about what from here you think we could prioritize, what we shouldn't prioritize, if there's something missing, we'd really love to hear that.
Alexis, I think you have your hand up. Is it specific for this?
In terms of wording and prioritizing, I would say that prioritizing health information exchange is very important. So nice to see it at the top of the list. At the same time, I would say two other pieces. One, the term ease is very subjective, and what might be easy, ease of exchange for one might be completely different definition for another. I have to think more on what might be a good substitute, but I'm not sure that ease in each category really brings across what you're trying to convey. And then lastly, when we talk about the ease of interoperability, I would just urge, and I had made notes as I ran through the slides that were sent out earlier, so maybe it's a comment for later, but just keeping in mind with interoperability also comes with opening up more problems sometimes in privacy and not losing sight of how much is exchanged and the ease of exchange between systems and not losing sight of the privacy for the patients.
Mm-hmm. That's helpful. Thank you.
John Kansky.
Yeah, just a quick follow on to Alexis's line of questioning. I don't really have a solution for this, but just to point out the difficulty in this overall task, the perception of, for example, the second row, ease of connecting to a PDMP, from the perspective of an EHR user, is going to be very dependent on what means the access to the PDMP is allowed. And what I'm specifically referring to or thinking of and bringing this up is that in some states, HIEs represent a good means of getting access to the PDMP data to the EHR, but state PDMP policies prevent that. So in one state, there might be a mechanism that the EHR can take advantage of that would make the ease of access seem much better, whereas in other states, policies of the program would prevent that avenue from being available to the EHR. So in trying to characterize the ease of connectivity to a PDMP for an EHR, there's some dependencies that are uncontrollable behind the scenes.
Very good point. Yeah, we would really love everyone's feedback on this topic too. We did try to hone in on what is best reflective of the product itself and the product's performance and functionalities, but as you're bringing out, some of these things might be also affected by policy, state level things. So that's very helpful. Thank you.
Carolyn Peterson, you have your hand up as well.
Thanks, Robert. Yes, I just wanted to reinforce Alexa's point about this concern with the term ease. I think we all appreciate the value of working in ways that doesn't increase the clinical burden or the burden to administrators and other people who are involved in making the interoperability a reality. At the same time, I think an emphasis on expediency can sometimes get us into real trouble. We want to find the balance between what is reasonable for reporting and measurement, but also ensuring that the work is effective and the systems really give us the outcomes we're looking for.
And so currently, I don't know if you have the question open, but and I'd be interested if you have an alternative suggestion for the response options. So we have a survey methodologist, so we have kind of gone through these response options as kind of the way that surveys are usually structured, but they are very easy, neither easy nor difficult, very difficult, and then don't know or not applicable. Is there a concept other, so I'm hearing you mention efficiency or effectiveness as other things we could focus on as an alternative to how easy it is. I don't know if you have any specific suggestions and how you would word the question instead.
I haven't looked at it in a particular degree at this point, to be honest, having just received it a few days ago. But I think it's certainly something that merits a broader discussion if that's something that ONC and the Urban Institute are open to.
Is the primary concern how easy it is to use.
It looks like ease has prompted a number of hands up. So, Clem, you're next.
Yeah, I have the same problem with the word ease. And I think it's compounded or made complex by the fact that it's usually two parties and there's two directions. And I think firstly, the ability this is from the medical record side, the ability to deliver with health information organizations and HIEs, that might be the focus. I don't think I'd worry about the burden because these are usually not on the providers, care providers. These exchange things are all mostly are burdens on the installation of implementation, which is a one-time cost. So I think the ease is a bad problem. I think you got to analyze a little bit more about for who. You can't blame the medical record system if the other end can't do it, something like with a PDMP in some cases. But I think it's important to name and push all these issues.
Alexis, did you want to add in addition to what you typed into the comment section?
No, I was just going to offer what I put in the comments about substituted words. Perhaps seamless.
Yeah.
How seamless is it?
Well, the suggestion of ability or capability from Vic sounds like a better direction.
Jonathan, you had your hand up as well. I didn't know if you wanted to speak on it or type in it.
Yeah, I used to do research in this area, but it's been like 15 years, and so I'm a little rusty. But Raj, I don't know if he's on the call here, continues to do research in this area. There are standardized instruments that that will provide some guidance here. And so I just encourage referencing some of that work. There's a lot of work in social psychology that can disentangle some of the concepts others have mentioned. And so I think this is mostly a solved problem. You just have to refer to the instruments and then pick, you know, what you're trying to accomplish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Roz and the team are very helpful in sharing their work with us. So we'll continue to look at that.
Great. Other comments on this point before we proceed with the presentation? Carolyn, you had your hand up again. Was this a second comment or was this from your first one?
I didn't intend to put it up. I'll put it down now. But just getting back to the clinical burden point, I think that it's kind of the end game issue for the patient. If the interoperability is not working and the information is not going where it needs to go, it does become a clinical burden because the only person the patient can address to get that fixed is the provider. So it becomes, you said this was going to happen, call the office. You know, mm-hmm. It's a downstream effect because that's the only way that the patient can engage with people. The patient can't call the IT staff and say, so here's what's wrong with your system and why I can't get what I need and what the law says I have to be able to access. We need to think in ways that keep the patient from needing to do things that create more problems for people who can't solve them.
That's a good point.
All right. Other comments on this point before this proceeds?
Yeah, Robert, this is Raj. Apologies, I'm not on the Acrobat, but I would like to make a comment if possible.
Sure, absolutely. Go ahead.
Great. So I want to come back to the point about standardized measures that those are there, and so I think that would help a lot of the terminology here. And then the other point I want to really stress is there's the comment around the PDMP and how state policies or even institutional policies are going to vary and therefore going to impact user experience and usability. And I think that's something that we have to recognize nearly with every single measure that we're going to talk about is that the state of health IT is there's so much variability by implementation, by policy, and so many other factors that there's going to be this constant tension between, well, is that actually really a product issue or is that because of a policy that's shaping the product? And mm-hmm. we have to grow comfortable with that tension. And I would argue that we want to capture the information from a user's perspective, regardless of what those policies, implementation variabilities, et cetera, are, because there's no other mechanism to capture it. And so it's best to capture it through this reporting program right now, and then find a way to stratify those data by all of the other measures we can grab. So if we start capturing mm-hmm. this data here and we say, wow, in the state of, you know, I'm not going to name a state because it's all recorded, in the state of whatever, there's really poor experience there. But in the state of blah, 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 there's really great experience there. That must be a product issue. Well, we can say, actually, let's take a step back and let's stratify those data by policies and other things that are impacting the product. So, you know, having gone through a lot of these sort of discussions about we can't really capture that measure because it doesn't actually reflect the product. We can and we should because we have no other way to capture it. And it's better to capture it here and find a good way to then stratify those data by other factors than to not capture at all.
Hmm. Thank you. That's a helpful point.
Emily?
Yeah, I think, you know, hearing all this, I really kind of I jive with the last comment. And what we might ask was the amount of what's gone across these different connections, is that kind of captures the net, you know, net ability. And if some people are failing, it'll, you know, if some states can't do it, hopefully people sort out why.
I think I cut Emily off with that as well. Sorry about that. Emily, have you had a comment?
No problem. I was just going to mention that we have a slide coming up, but to Raj's point, that we agree that stratification is really important, and the goal will be to collect these user criteria feedback points as well as information about the users so that analysis of these data could be stratified by state of residence, for example, or provider type or the share of uninsured patients seen out of practice. So I think that's something that's really important and has been guiding our development and thinking about these measures as well. So thank you for bringing that up.
All right. Other comments on this area before we move on to the rest of the presentation? Seeing none, Crystal, you can go ahead and proceed, I believe.
All right, great. Thank you. We really appreciate all these comments. The next slide is on the usability domain. So these are questions 6 through 8 in the questionnaire if you're following along, and 8 is also a very multi-part question, you'll see. But the draft usability criteria, they focus on topics of provider burden, quality and safety, and ease of use. So I know we have issues with the word ease now, so, but which we will continue to think about for various functions that should enhance usability. So in terms of provider burden, we ask for a satisfaction rating in terms of the user's satisfaction with the product's contribution to their productivity, how well it aligns with their workflow, whether it easily accesses and assimilates data from other products and produces clinical benefits. For quality and safety, we focus on satisfaction with the product enabling high quality care, improving patient safety, not disrupting interaction with patients, preventing errors, and that has advantages that outweigh the disadvantages. And for both interoperability and usability, a lot of the wording, we did review, as you guys have pointed us to, a number of standardized questions, measures, and pulled from language as much as we could. And then features and functions to enhance usability. We started out with a very, very long list of features and functions we heard from the stakeholders, but kind of narrowed it down throughout our process in terms of what people prioritize, what people seem to know to be able to report on. And so this I won't read them all, but you can see this includes a number of specific features. Kind of interesting, some of the features that seemed a little bit during the stakeholder process, like they were more important maybe for rural practices like telemedicine and mobile and remote access, have become more broadly important now. In the same way, I thought I would pause and see, as you look at the usability priorities, user criteria, if you're looking at the questionnaire, you can look at the wording, what you would prioritize. There's a lot of functions here, so if there are ones that would be more important or less important, I'm interested in that. And then again, as you've brought up before, what is it getting at what we want? You know, and is it reflecting as much as we can the product itself, keeping in mind that, you know, it's hard to isolate that.
Okay, it looks like we may have dropped Robert's audio, so I see Denise Webb and then Alexa Snyder for comments.
Yes, thank you, Denise Webb. I was looking at the actual questions and the scales used, and I assume that the topic of provider burden and quality and safety, some of that was captured in question 7, which had a satisfaction scale, and it struck me that seem to make more sense rather than a satisfaction scale would be to use the degree of agreement scale. So mm-hmm. Does the user agree that the product allows users to be more productive, and to what degree of agreement? Strongly agree, agree, neither agree or disagree. It seemed to be more, you know, sensible than using satisfaction. Just a suggestion.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Great suggestion.
Alexis, I think you had a hand up as well.
Yes. Thank you. Just a couple overarching pieces. I don't have the questionnaire up in front of me, but I did look at it before this call and make some notes. So, sorry if I jump ahead to numbers you haven't presented. I just wanted to state overall, I think there was a piece that said to out to the clinicians or users who would be filling out the survey that it would take about 10 to 15 minutes. But I, reading through it and looking at all the questions and the level of complexity of some of the ordering for the questions, particularly the ones that say to rate something with the definitions A through F, I don't see how this survey is going to take 10 to 15 minutes. And so when you get to asking people about incentives to get people to use it, I guess that'll be important because I can't see somebody taking a half an hour or more to run through this survey. It seems very complex. So that's my overall comment. My other specific comment, as this is a user survey, and obviously patients and caregivers won't be directly using the interoperability and the EHR reporting systems, et cetera, I wonder if there's a way to reflect in the provider burdens and the quality and safety and features, et cetera, as we move through it, asking the providers and the other users questions reflective of feedback that they have received from patients to either their increased burden because of the use of the system or increase, disruption to their privacy, information shared when it shouldn't be, information that didn't get shared when it should be, et cetera. I think that's an important piece as we, again, like I mentioned before, open up more avenues for interoperability, we also sometimes open, Pandora's box. And, the patients are the best to be able to possibly speaking with their healthcare systems or their clinicians about the problems that interoperability is causing for them and where in this survey can that be reflected.
Great point. Thank you. And that the 10 to 15 minutes, it did come out of our testing. We put the questionnaire in an online platform and tested it, and that was kind of the average time it took. But I could see if you needed to get information from other sources or that it could take longer. So the language should reflect that.
Other comments or questions on the usability draft criteria?
Fred Blavin. I was just going to comment that there is variation potentially on how we send out the survey of who filled out the information. So sometimes it could be a clinician or provider. Sometimes it could be an administrative staff member or health IT specialist who might not be able to provide the best perspective on patients, on kind of the patient view of this. So that's partially why it's a challenge that we're facing with this, and it's something that we're looking to potentially address.
Okay. Other questions or comments from the high tech? Jonathan?
Yeah, I just wanted the team to just to reference my comments in the chat about, demonstrated variability by change management strategy and potential for accounting for that. And then second, the forthcoming standards from the American Association of Medical Instruments on usability, and there should be some reference to that. That's all.
Great. Thank you.
Other comments from the committee on this? All right, seeing none, Crystal, you can proceed.
All right, great. Does the chat get saved? Will we be able to keep it, or should we copy and paste everything to make sure we have it?
No, we have the ability to capture the comment.
Okay, perfect.
We'll capture the chat.
Okay, I don't want to lose all this great stuff in there. We can go to the next slide. The next slide is very short. So I really am interested to hear more. I think you guys have raised some really good issues related to privacy and security in terms of the trade-offs with interoperability and then the patient's perspective. But in general, we probably heard the least about this topic during our stakeholder process. But what we did hear, we found to be most likely better suited to be collected from other sources than the user. So you have brought up some other points that perhaps we could collect more from the user. So this is question 13 on the questionnaire. And it's an overall satisfaction rating, security and privacy features. And in terms of the features, we give examples of multi-factor authentication, role-based access controls, 42 CFR Part 2, and HIPAA as the types of things to consider when giving the rating. And then we also have an open ended comment box if the user wants to further explain their rating. I think initially we had perhaps had some separate questions for these different things, but throughout our testing process and feedback we got, it seemed to make sense to consolidate in terms of what the typical end user might report on, be able to report on. But I know it's a short slide, but very interested if you guys have any feedback for things we could consider here.
Questions or comments on the security draft criteria? I don't see any hands. Anybody else on the phone that's not on the Adobe app? Crystal, you can go ahead and proceed.
Oh, great. Thank you. And as I previously mentioned, we don't have a slide for conformance certification in terms of a domain for the user criteria, given that was determined to be better suited collected from developers or other existing sources like CAPL or data collection during certification process. So the next slide focuses on the other draft criteria topics, which is kind of a catch-all, but the remaining priorities that didn't fit into other existing domains in the CARES Act were more general satisfaction, pricing and cost, available support from the developer, and contractual information. So these are mostly covered in questions 9 through 17, and they mostly fall within that blue horizontal arrow, if you remember from the framework, that was for cost and developer practices. We heard a lot about these topics from our stakeholders during the process, but in terms of the satisfaction ratings, we have overall product satisfaction rating, and then satisfaction with the implementation process, with maintenance and upgrades in terms of how much notice they get, how much downtime it requires, and then the available support from the developer. For pricing and cost, there was a lot of interest here, but as you can imagine, it's pretty challenging to collect information, especially from end users who might not have all the information. So we had more cost measures initially, but have narrowed down to asking about the pricing model and the approximate total implementation and maintenance costs. So we recognize only certain types of users might be able to report this information. And then questions on the availability of support and whether there's an additional fee required for things like desk support, dedicated client support, in-person support, and other things. And then contractual information, whether or not the contract includes a defined cost and a procedure for users to leave the product, sometimes referred to as an out clause. Interestingly, we met a lot of people along the way who were in the process of switching their EHR, and so heard a number of things on how challenging that is, not just for contractual reasons, but other reasons. I think one of the most memorable quotes is someone saying, it'd be easier to change my husband than to change my EHR. So there's a lot of interest in information on this. There was some other contractual information that was of interest but no longer relevant after the interoperability rule, such as GAD clauses. So we did update our criteria to reflect the most recent policy landscape as much as we could. So I'll just pause here. And if you have the questionnaire, you can look. I think that we really wrapped up if there are suggestions there. And then in general, you know, what to prioritize. I know we have a lot of questions about support for standard use, but there were also a lot of priorities in that area. So what you think is priority, or if you have any questions or suggestions for us, we'd be interested to hear.
Denise, I see your hand up.
Yes. So when I was with the state of Wisconsin, we had administered a similar survey where there were some questions that only one or two people in the organization could really answer. And so I'm not sure what the plan is for disseminating the survey, but I would suggest that it might be a good idea to consolidate the questions that generally can only be answered by certain individuals in the organization. I mean, because there's so much group practice, and in large group practice, you'll want to have those questions answered once and not flow down to each of the users within that group practice. So I'm not exactly sure how you would do that, but the point being, you really do want to collect this and then be able to tie it. So if there's 100 clinicians that answer the survey that are in a single group practice, that it would link back to the answers to the questions by the person who can answer these questions, like on contract and price and support and those kind of things.
Yeah, great suggestion.
Clem, you also had your hand up?
Yeah, I wonder if there could be some questions asking about, and this is would be to the provider care, using the system, how much time it takes to do a given event. You know, there's studies show that it always goes up, and that's the big complaint. One big complaint from providers is that it takes longer than just scribbling something or writing it down. So whether there could be some question about, you know, to enter an average order, and that's a hard question to construct, but I think it'd still be useful to get timing in somewhere, something concrete into the questionnaire. We did a study asking how much free time they lost, and one big survey with American College of Physicians, and that really, you didn't, if they count, ask them about how much, that's a different issue, though. I mean, it has to do with policy as well as the systems. But an awful lot of them are doing work at home now on the computer.
That's a great suggestion.
Other comments or questions from the committee?
Yeah, this is Raj. I have a question and a comment. So the first question is, there seem to be patient safety elements kind of sprinkled throughout. So I heard a little bit, I think, on the interoperability side, a little bit on the usability side. Wondering if you could just recap what all of those patient safety elements are, and then maybe some discussion around, is there an opportunity to introduce more patient safety focused questions, given that there really are few mechanisms for our providers to report on safety issues. So that's the question. Mm-hmm. And then the sort of suggestion is, on those other criteria that we just talked about, maybe something around this of the vendor to respond to a reported safety issue or other high priority usability issue.
Great question. We'll start, and then my team could jump in. I think it was very helpful to hear throughout from experts, like in terms of whether safety should be its own column or arrow or whatever, but that safety should be kind of baked in throughout, as you were saying. So we did try to keep it in the front of our minds. But I think actually, as we're talking now, I'm remembering that we might have it more in our in terms of objective measures. It seemed that developers could more likely report on some of these things. In terms of things like counts or time, but I think from the user's perspective, we did try to bake it into the usability in terms of how the product more generally affects safety. In terms of things like counts for error, I think there were suggestions throughout stakeholder process, and even from the expert process too, for counts for like errors or for, you know, overriding alerts and things like that. But just in terms of the burden from the user perspective, we stuck to the questionnaire format. We did try to keep it in mind throughout. Maybe I'll pass it to the team who worked on this a little bit more if anyone wants to jump in.
Sure, this is Gary Ozanich again. Part of the challenge as we interacted with the stakeholders in capturing their you know, knowledge and ability to I guess the way to describe it is explain or conceptualize the issue of patient safety. It came up much more in the area of clinical decision support and areas that are very much product specific as opposed to certification criteria. So the feedback we got was, less concerned, about, is more about privacy likely than safety per se. And once again, more in a context of workflow. So the ability to capture that in the questionnaires becomes a little bit more complex. I don't know, Raj, if you have thoughts on that.
Well, I mean, I would say I agree it's complex, but I would say from every clinician that I've talked to in the previous studies that we've done, when we ask questions about, can you describe a feature or element of the EHR or other health IT that prevents potential or realized patient safety risks, the answer is always yes. And the provider usually has a very concrete description, a very memorable moment where there was some interaction with the electronic health record that left them feeling really uncomfortable or where they actually committed an error. So I think it's, while it's difficult to capture in perhaps a structured format, I think it's important to capture. And I'll just come back to the point sort of made that I made earlier, which is there are few other ways for us to capture this information. And I think that becomes really important as we think about the different tools that we have at our disposal. And perhaps we can talk a little bit offline about maybe some specific questions that could be introduced. And I realize that obviously we want to keep the queries here to a minimum, given the already expressed concerns about the time to complete the survey. But I think this is a critical one, and maybe other members of the committee have some ideas.
Right. Other comments from the committee? All right, Crystal, proceed.
Raj, if I could just ask a follow-up question. The question that you just suggested in terms of, has this product ever, have you had a moment where you think it, was a risk to safety or caused an error, do you think of that as more an open-ended question or a yes-no question?
I think you could express it in a few different ways. I mean, one is to express it to say, how frequently do you interact with the EHR and sort of see some of these risks so that we can determine whether this is their interactions on a regular basis are presenting patient safety risks or with it really whether it's more of an anomaly. So we could structure it that way. And I think some kind of open-ended question would be really good to have as well. To see what we can get back and then to do some aggregation of those.
Okay. Thank you.
Here again, I just wanted to comment that, the feedback we got, particularly from the developers on some of these issues, has to do more with, the implementation of the product and the use of the product versus the product. Also developing questions that may distinguish between, what is the workflow and what is the implementation versus something that's actually associated with the product is also a complex issue. I just wanted to mention that.
I would agree. I think that is a really complex issue, but I would view this as a tool where we can identify areas that need further focus. And so it's a signal. And so if we are getting some feedback that there's a potential safety issue in a particular implementation, that doesn't mean we go throw that whole vendor company into federal prison. It means we go to that site and we begin to understand what are the specific implementation choices, workflow, training models, et cetera, that may be contributing to that safety issue. That's the way I would view it.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks.
Yeah, that's helpful.
That's
kind of a bigger conversation, too. We can save for the end, but I mean, it sounds like there's multiple purposes for this information that we collect, part of it being put out there to compare products, but part of it to learn other things, like you're saying. I guess we'll move on. We can maybe return to some of these bigger picture things at the end. So the last slide related to the questions for the users are, as Emily brought up earlier, some of the product characteristic and then user characteristics that we heard from stakeholders that they want to be able to see, how is someone, what products are people using in a similar setting as me, a similar practice size as me, so that they could compare results that way. So these are questions number 1 and 2 and 18 to 24 in the questionnaire. The first question, of course, would be to identify what health IT product the respondent is responding about, and it would be a drop down for them to select. And then the user characteristics that we heard as important and included were the type of clinical or non-clinical user, setting, practice size, types of services at the practice, what state they're in, the extent to which they're in an urban or rural setting, the share of patients that are uninsured or covered by Medicaid. And then we have a question about the user proficiency with the product as well. I know someone brought up that might be an issue. So just wanted to pause to see if there's any other suggestions for important characteristics that we might want to try to capture.
Alexis, you had your hand up?
Yes, thank you. In reference to question number 23 about the shared uninsured and or Medicaid population, if we're talking about exchange of information between the EHR and the payer, it might be good or would be good to have a question surrounding the percentage of patients that have more than one payer, more than one insurance, whether it be private and Medicaid or Medicaid, Medicare, or tertiary care is important when we talk about the interoperability of the multiple players that are involved. Oh, and then real quick number, just a little wordsmithing thing perhaps. Question 24, at the bottom of the list, it talks about, you know, your expertise with the system per se, and the last choice is struggling with. And I'm not sure that people like to answer surveys and say, I'm struggling with something, so maybe I've had difficulty with this, or I would like more help with this. Just a, just a small piece.
Good point. Thank you.
Sasha, you had your hand up and then it popped off. I'm not sure if you still had a comment.
Oh, I was going to ask if the product characteristic was multi-select, but then I saw my question was answered on the slide. I assume the S means it is multi-select. So I took my hand down. Thanks.
Okay, good. Cheryl?
Thank you, and thank you for presenting this. I was just wondering, I did review the survey, but I wasn't 100% clear like where a product like Availity might be captured, because this is really focusing on like EHR systems, but we have, I'm a representative payer, and we have thousands of providers who exchange data with us through a portal that's basically been put out by multiple payers. So there's like a common interface that they have to some degree. And some of the capabilities of data sharing with a payer would be taken care of by that, but I don't know if anyone filling out this form would naturally think about that because they're thinking about their EHR system and it doesn't happen through that. So how would that be captured in this survey?
Great question. And this is, we also have struggled with this. I guess part of the challenge is, you know, it's called the EHR reporting program, but then I think, as we know, like the, for certification purposes, it's not EHRs that are certified, but these different functions. I think in terms of what we focus on in here, you're right. It really is, and I think from the user's perspective, they would be thinking of their EHR. So I'm not sure I currently really have a good answer. I don't know if others from the team want to chime in, but it is something that we've been grappling with and we need to continue to think about.
Right. It might be the fair to ask just an open-ended question that asks what other tools do you use for data interoperability, so at least you're then at least now aware of what they are. Because, again, some of the interchange to the practitioner, it might be invisible because it's administrative staff or someone that's handling that, and I'm not, you know, I don't work in a physician's practice. I have not. But in dealing with many physicians over the years, I'm not 100% sure how much they know about, you know, what tool is used for what, if they're not the ones who are actually doing it, if they have administrative staff that does it. So, again, I do think it's important comments that other people made about who's actually completing it, and then at least gathering the knowledge so that you know, hey, you know, there's all these other tools that people are using in order to accomplish this, and, you know, surveys not really capturing any of that.
Yeah, great point. Really points to the need for kind of more customized questions going to different types of users, too, people with different roles.
Right. I mean, we have some providers that use HIEs in order to share ADTs with us. That wouldn't come out on this either. I mean, so I'm not, I kind of struggled with where to ask my question because wasn't sure exactly where it fit in, but I do think there's a scenario for that. And from a patient's perspective, although that's been brought up a few times, I know that, you know, some systems in terms of utilizing the data, you don't know really what's behind the you know, the curtain. And I know, mm-hmm. you know, personally, when my daughter, who has a condition, was with a system that started using Open Notes, for her ability to see her data increased dramatically when they implemented that. But not mm-hmm. all of the physicians that she sees utilize it. And so from her perspective, she's like, well, why can I see this detail here but not over here in this system? Not understanding that it really has to do with, you know, what they've implemented for their patient portals. So, you know, just throwing that out there as well.
Great point.
Other questions or comments from the committee? All right. Crystal, you have more?
Mm-hmm. Great, thank you. And just a thought. Ollie's such great feedback. We really appreciate it. And I think, I mean, we do really need to think more. But as we started this journey, you know, developing the program, we were trying to think of including as many settings, you know, as far as we could, post-acute care and all this, and different types of products as possible. And throughout our process, we kind of narrowed from feedback and testing towards doing like a few focused things well, if we can, you know. But I think in that process, we don't want to leave out important things that you guys are bringing out. So this is really helpful. I think we can go to the last couple of slides. So we've gone through all the domains and, you know, categories of questions. We've addressed the first two bullets here. But the last things I wanted to discuss at a higher level, I think we've already gotten into who would be reporting this information, what types of users. But should this focus on the most recent versions of products? So I guess what that would mean for users is, in terms of the drop-down, we would only include the most recent versions, and then you would, I guess, only be eligible to participate if you had a most recent version, just thinking of the purpose being to provide transparent information on products that people would buy or upgrade to, and it's not likely they would be going to a non-most recent version. But then I also hear the point from others that there's other uses for this information in terms of learning about products. So I could see it going either way. Also, how should we collect this information? How do we target the different types of people who would be able to answer these questions? I mean, some thoughts we've had range from crowdsourcing, you know, just putting it out there and advertising it through associations and, you know, all different media, or getting some lists from, you know, like FKNA, or, you know, lists from of providers, lists of administrators, lists of health IT staff, and blasting out an email inviting people to participate. Or if there's other ways that people have that you'd want to suggest. And then how could we motivate voluntary reporting to get people to contribute information? So I'm really interested in everyone's thoughts on these questions and anything else you want to comment on in terms of the bigger picture of the program and the user criteria.
Thanks, Crystal. Other comments or questions from the committee? Terry O'Malley?
Yeah, hi, Terry O'Malley. Just to repeat, I think what you already said, Crystal, and a couple other people have said, and that is you've got a multiple questions that can be answered best by multiple different types of roles, whether it's clinicians or administrators, et cetera. And so the thought of just parsing the survey and really making it multiple surveys in one, but with specific questions for each role group that they can answer easily and well. As a clinician, mm-hmm. for example, if you ask me what my system version was, I'd say, don't ask me, you know, I'm mm-hmm. going to get mine. But if you ask me how long it took me to order a lab test, I can tell you that.
Mm-hmm.
So perhaps really parsing the survey, really into multiple surveys, to get the information, but target it specifically to the groups that can answer it best.
Mm-hmm.
And this is just a rehash of what you've already said a couple of times.
Yeah, that's helpful. Or I guess another approach might be to send it as like a practice survey. Maybe it would go to the practice level and have them determine who could best. I know sometimes we do this with Medicaid surveys, but send it to the Medicaid agency and they have to collaborate among their staff to answer all the different questions. But I don't know if that's too much of a burden. Another possible approach.
Great, thanks. Alexis, you had your hand up?
Yeah, in addition to, you know, possibly deciding who fills it out and parsing out the surveys, would be the suggestion of using branching knowledge within the survey, which might cut down on the time for some users if the questions had nothing to do with their area of expertise. The branching logic in the survey could lead them to the next question, or if it was their area of expertise, it would open up the next set of questions within that question, if that makes sense. And then my other quick piece in reference to burden, as I mentioned earlier, as far as trying to motivate people to voluntarily report is so difficult when we're already talking about systems that are burdensome and providers and other clinicians not having time. Where do they find the time to do this? And I don't know at all if this is an option, but my only suggestion would be, is there a way to offer some sort of one for the person who's checking off that they are having difficulty or struggling with their current system to get some kind of free training in response to their answers from vendors? And or is there a way to have some kind of offset of cost from a vendor, which I know might be difficult because that might be choosing one or the other, but if it was some kind of generic voucher to offset the cost of any or all, might motivate someone with not a lot of time who is interested in finding the best system to participate voluntarily.
A good suggestion. So something tangible, that some incentive.
Correct.
Thanks. A couple things. Lauren has put something in the public chat area. We're running a little bit ahead of schedule. For those of you that are planning a public comment, we may be able to accommodate your public comment earlier than the published schedule. The public comment period was scheduled for 12:15, but we're running a little bit ahead. So please be prepared to make your public comment earlier than previously scheduled, because it looks like we may end early. Also, Arian, you have a microphone up. I don't know if you had your hand up. I sent you a note, but if you want to speak, just put your hand up. The next person I see is Clem McDonald.
I mean, it seems like everybody's in agreement that there's different questions for different parties, and but I didn't hear us say, yeah, let's do it that way. I mean, how actually it's implemented isn't up to us, but it seems like there's consensus on that. But I also support the time question. You know, there's really compressed time, so one might be worth going through and peeling out, you know, picking the really best questions and not doing as much within a given group who would be answering it.
Yeah, that definitely is helpful.
Denise, I see your hand up.
Yeah, I just wanted to add to some of the other comments regarding the actual deployment of the survey. I think it's the deployment of the survey is going to need to be really well orchestrated, almost to the extent where, while it's voluntary, there'll have to be some sort of plan to possibly formally recruit organizations to sign up to do the survey, and then you could have a point of contact for that organization that actually launches the survey. It gets everybody on board to take their part. And, you know, some well-orchestrated steps where you have a liaison at the organization that's going to get the endorsement of the leadership and to get as many of their clinicians and give them time to fill out their part. And then if you build the branching in the survey, then it can start with that liaison answering the basic questions that apply to the whole organization, and then pushing it on to the others where they only see the questions that they need to take. So, you know, a little bit of technology built into this.
Yeah, no, very true. I think the buy-in of the organization and that upfront work to get people to agree to participate would be really helpful.
Yeah, and I just know from coming from a health system and hearing a lot of the concerns from providers about the EHR,
while it takes them time to answer the survey, it is an opportunity for them to air their concerns.
Mm-hmm.
And have them published so that they all can be shared amongst one another and people can make better decisions about products.
Mm-hmm. True. So presenting it in that way as an opportunity for them to share would be good.
Clem, you had another question?
Yeah, sorry, a comment. I hadn't pictured having every practitioner in a practice fill this out. That would be a huge amount of time. Rather, probably it should be targeted at the primary care or those. I mean, some of the specialty surgeons hardly touch the machine. But I just don't think you're going to get 100 or 500 practitioners filling it out if you could ask the organization to find some volunteers who are heavy users. It might be less burden. But maybe it has to be everybody.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a good point, because what if one organization has one person fill it out and another one has like 500 people fill it out? It's kind of interesting which we want to do, sampling versus kind of just put it out there and see who answers. It sounds like people are going towards being more deliberate in targeting.
Well, I think you got to not do sampling. I mean, you got a whole bunch of different kinds of providers in a complex practice group. And it should be the providers who are heavy users of the order entry and the note taking. And I don't know if anyone else on the call could kind of pick out who they are, but they're not going to be the orthopedic surgeons. You know, they have agents to do all that work. And probably not going to be most any of the heavy, high price surgeons. But I think primary care and general medicine and pediatrics.
It's Jim Jurgis, if I can comment on this topic. I think you're right on because there are those who barely touch the machine, and you actually get a false, you get bad answers. And for me, instead of going through and picking out specialty, there are subspecialists who do use it, and maybe starting with the top 50% users or something would be a better measure, because though you're correct, in some specialties they have other people interact with the computer. That's not universally true. And then you run the risk of missing key specialists.
That's
so I think the highest 50% order users probably makes good sense. And if you're too deliberate, then you get sampling error and all that other stuff.
Yeah. Good point.
Yeah, very good point.
Clem, did you have more comment? Sorry.
No, thank you.
Great. Ken, I think you're next up.
Yeah, thanks. Whatever it is, I think the methodology should be ideally pretty standardized, because, you know, obviously if you choose the person who you know is a clinical champion, right, let's say an institution has physician informaticists who are assigned to optimize the EHR, and you naturally ask them, you're going to get very different answers than the people who, you know, have no idea how to use the system, for example. So whatever it is, I think this needs to be systematic and at the very least reported how people were recruited. It's the kind of thing, like, you would never publish a study where you say, you know, we're comparing these 10 health systems and how they like their EHR, and, you know, we're not describing how we recruited people and who actually participated. It would be meaningless.
Mm-hmm.
Good point.
Yeah.
Jim, did you have another comment?
Yeah, hey, thank you. Yeah, it is interesting, because if we're trying to measure the EHR itself along these criteria, one of the interesting points I think we've all experienced is when we survey doctors, there's kind of two types. There's the type that invests themselves in going to training and learning how the tool can be used, and those are the ones that typically complain about actual deficits in the technology. And then there's the group that just never bothered, and they give very different answers about the EHR that is inaccurate, but is a reflection of how dependent that EHR may be on training. So, if you're trying to assess the EHR in and of itself, then a more sophisticated user might actually give you better answers. Because less sophisticated users may actually give you erroneous answers because they just don't understand how their EHR works. That might be a reflection of usability, but it may skew the other way.
Yeah, that's true. Because the characteristics of who fills this out is really important.
Other comments or questions from the committee?
Yeah, this is Clem. That's a follow-up. I put my hand back up on head and up. The idea of if it takes 3 days of training, that's a problem in itself. And I think that if we only take the people who are perfectly trained, you're going to get a completely wrong answer. So I'm for Ken's idea. In a systematic way, but I think taking the frequent users would be the most important, would be the most useful. They would be fairly fair, and you'd get people who have enough experience to give a fair answer.
Mm. Okay.
Other comments or questions from the committee? People on the phone that maybe not on the app, go ahead and speak up. Okay. Chris, I think you have any information on the call sign. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm really looking for help on this issue of whether we should focus on the most recent versions only or not. If anyone has any thoughts on that, I would appreciate it.
Boy. I mean, let's think about Meditech magic, right? So by only focusing on expands, and you look at the financial situation many hospitals are in, if the purpose of this is only to help people as they make purchasing decisions, then you're right. You should focus on the latest release. If the purpose is to allow people to understand prior versions when they may not be yet ready to move to the new one, you know, most people in Meditech inpatient have not moved to expand. So you'd be deliberately not getting feedback about platforms people aren't about to leave. And maybe that's okay if you're only focusing on solving the problem of future purchasing. Is that the goal?
So I guess that's the
purpose. I mean, a lot of Meditech magic modifications are occurring, right? When people don't move to the new platform, there's things Meditech can still do to improve these things. And by only focusing on new versions, you're playing right into the hands of the vendors who might want people to pay the money to upgrade. And also maybe missing things that can be done on platforms that are going to continue to be used.
I see. So the feedback to the developers on other versions that they can still make modifications to is also useful.
Oh, they are, yeah. They're making lots of modifications for us, for example.
Oh, okay. That's really helpful. Thank you.
John Kansky, you had your hand up?
Thank you. So I guess this is a comment that is best directed to the ONC. I remember when the law came out that I gave this assignment to the ONC, and it struck some of us, including me, as an unusual task to give the federal government. It sounded a bit like they were being asked to be consumer reports for EHR products. Now that we're much further into this and more time has passed, I'm interested in any comments that the committee has or the ONC has or the contractors have about does this feel like an appropriate role for federal government? Is there precedence for this in other industries, meaning sort of evaluating and publishing comparative information on products? And then finally, is there a vision for how ONC is going to be able to do this without, I guess, just respond to the potential for concern there, and whether I'm worried about nothing or something. Thank you.
Chris, do you want to respond from your standpoint, and we'll have others from the ONC perhaps answer?
I think Seth probably would be best to respond to this.
Yeah, hi, Seth Zizinski. So I guess there's, you know, to respond to the initial question, and I'll ask you if others from ONC who were also engaged in this, the technical assistance process for the Cures Act legislation have any additional points to weigh in. But the law as specified was clear in that the work to establish the program, at least, you know, the research and stakeholder engagement and the development of draft criteria and going through this type of process was to be done by ONC, but via a procurement. So that was specifically specified in the law to as a part of establishing the program. In addition to that, the aspects of the program include both the developer piece as well as the user piece. So I think that too is two distinct aspects of the program. And I feel like on the developer side in particular, the link there is that it's a condition of certification under the ONC certification program. So that is a, you know, compared to what could be done in the private sector, I think in particular on the developer side, that's a unique aspect that implementing the HR reporting program wouldn't be possible to be done through, outside of the federal government.
Other comments or questions from the committee? Crystal, did you have other questions for the committee?
No, I don't. The last slide just shows the feedback email address. If there's anything that people think of later that you want to share with us, we really welcome your feedback. I appreciate everyone's comments today. They've been so helpful. Have all these smart brains on the issue. We really appreciate it.
Great. Well, thank you for all the work. And one final time, any other comments or questions from the committee? All right. Well, thank you again, Crystal and your team, for all the work, and appreciate the presentation.
Thank you.
As we noted earlier, I think we're a little bit ahead of schedule. I'm going to turn it over to Lauren to go through the process for public comment, unless we have other comments from the committee.
Great. Yes, if we can pull up our comments, guys. And while we're pulling that up, we'll ask the operator to open the public line.
Thank you. If you'd like to make a public comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your comment from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys.
Thanks. And operator, do we have any comments in the queue?
Yes, we have a comment from Shelley Spiro.
Please proceed.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Shelley Spiro. I'm the executive director of the Pharmacy HIT Collaborative, representing over 250,000 members of the majority national pharmacy associations, including pharmacy education and accreditation. Our members include key pharmacy organizations involved in health IT, including the National Council for Prescription Drug Programs, NCPDP, 13 associate members representing e-prescribing, health information networks, pharmacy company system vendors, and other organizations that support pharmacist services. A major focus of the Pharmacy HIT Collaborative is to ensure pharmacists in all practice settings, community, health system, hospital, managed care, behavioral health, long-term and post-acute care are integrated into the national health IT structure. with a wide adoption of the pharmacist e-care plan effort using CCDA and FHIR standards, we agree with Dr. O'Malley's comments to assure non-traditional EHR vendors are able to certify for interoperable exchange of clinical information. This includes pharmacy system vendors. PHIT is the steward of over 650 SNOMED CT codes and over 100 value sets within the National Library of Medicine's Value Set Authority Standard Authority Center to standardize the collection, documentation, and sharing of medication-related pharmacist-provided clinical services with standards such as the Pharmacist E-Care Plan. The Pharmacy HIT Collaborative supports the efforts of USCDI. Thank you very much for allowing me to comment today.
Thank you, Shelley. Operator, do we have another comment?
No comments at this time.
Stephen, I see your hand up. I'm not sure if it's on the public comment or on the previous presentation.
No, it's just while we have time for additional high-tech comments, I wanted to get in queue.
Okay. Be sure to put your hand up again. Let's finish up the public comment period first, and then we'll go to the rest of the committee.
I don't think there are any others at this time, Robert.
Okay. All right. Well, as we get ready to wrap up, let's hear from the committee on any other topic that we haven't had a chance to discuss during the meeting. And I think, Stephen, you did have a comment about that.
Yeah, thanks. And I just wanted to thank you for sharing information earlier about the work you're doing with Common Health. I think that's really exciting. And we, too, have been working with them and look forward to their progress. In that context, I took the opportunity to put some comments in the chat about progress that's being made with the electronic case reporting under the auspices of Care Quality, and also another care quality policy that was finalized and published to support a greater interoperability between providers and public health. So I put all that in the chat with appropriate links, and I just wanted to share that with folks. And thank you, Robert, for opening up that opportunity.
Oh, thanks, Steve. Yeah, I was trying to respond to a couple of private chats, and I thought it'd be worth sharing with everyone about where we are with Common Health and Common Pass for travel and working on trying to get a standardized way to get lab information flowing through the system.
Yeah, it's all great stuff.
Okay. Other comments or suggestions from the committee? Anything else from the ONC that we need to talk about? Perhaps a reminder of the interoperability conference is coming up, timing and site again.
Sure. Yep. Robert, there's a form. I did send out the reminder and the registration link to the full committee. So if you didn't get that, just let me know and we can resend that. But that will be in August, virtually, of course.
Yep. Okay. All right. Carol, any other comments?
I just want to thank everyone for attending the meeting today and particularly for giving a very rich discussion around the EHR reporting program user criteria. From the annual report work group standpoint, we welcome you to our July and August meetings. We will be happy to see you in September. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Carolyn. Yep. And just as a reminder to the members of the public, the committee will be going on a bit of a summer break and will resume again in September. So please join us then. And I will also just turn it over to Dr. Rucker, see if there are any other closing remarks before we adjourn. Okay, looks like he's just in. Thanking everyone and hope you all enjoy your summer in advance. Thanks again for the feedback today, and we will adjourn and we'll be in touch over the summer as well.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, everyone. Have a great day.
Bye.
Be safe.
Bye-bye.